I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning. I am Duncan Ferguson. I'll be serving as your worship associate this morning. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Our minister, the Reverend Lisa Day, is our worship leader this morning, and Christine 80 will bring our Love at the Center moment. Our worship, religious education, and covenant group theme for February is Embodying Resilience. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube and on site, whoever you know yourself to be, and wherever you are on your journey. With the lighting of our chalice, symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, we enter into sacred time. Our chalice lighting words this morning are by Sharon Wiley. You are never alone. It is okay to be tired of change. It is okay to be tired of everything different. It's okay to feel weary of resiliency and wholeness and learning and growth. It's okay to yearn simply to rest. It's okay to be grouchy and unsatisfied, and all the ordinary human ways of being that we are. Let this morning be a reminder that you are loved. Let our time together soothe what is restless in you. May you be comforted in knowing that whatever you are feeling today and other days, you are not alone. You are never alone. Come. Let us worship together.
Welcome to this sacred space. Welcome to worship. Welcome to you who are joyful and excited this day. Welcome to you who are weary and in need of rest. Welcome to you who are seeking deeper meaning and purpose. In the infinite expanse of life. Today we come with full hearts and open spirits to be open to the possibility that what we receive here will inspire us to mend up our tender parts, nourish our waning spirits, and give us enough wisdom and energy to embody resilience with every breath. And so let us worship together.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Christine, and I will be bringing you your Love at the Center moment today. So this is coming from a Facebook post, actually, I got from the Walk for Peace, which I'm sure you know is a journey that a group of Buddhist monks are taking on foot from Texas to D.C., and will be culminating in a few days. The title of this is The Hardest Person to Forgive. We can forgive others with surprising ease sometimes. A friend hurts us, and eventually we let it go. A stranger wrongs us, and we find a way to move past it. But when it comes to forgiving ourselves, that's where we become stuck. Regret holds us like nothing else can. We replay our mistakes endlessly, the words we shouldn't have said, the choices we wish we could undo, the people we hurt. We carry these memories like heavy chains, dragging them everywhere, unable to walk forward, trapped in a past that cannot be changed, while life continues flowing around us. Forgiving ourselves does not erase what happened. It does not pretend our mistakes don't matter or that we caused no harm. What it does is release the weight so we can actually do something meaningful with what we've learned. It frees us to become better, to grow from our mistakes rather than being crushed by them, to walk forward with the lightness we need to bring peace to others. How can we offer peace to the world when we are still at war with ourselves? How can we extend compassion to others when we withhold it from our own hearts? Peace begins within, not just with calming our minds, but with learning to treat ourselves with the same gentleness, the same understanding, the same mercy we so readily offer to everyone else. We are human. We may make mistakes. This is not a failure. This is simply what it means to be alive, to be learning, to be walking a path we've never walked before. The question is not whether we will stumble. The question is, will we allow those stumbles to define us forever, or will we learn from them, forgive ourselves, and keep walking? Let us be gentle with our own hearts. Let us forgive ourselves, not as an ending, but as a beginning, not as a permission to repeat mistakes, but as freedom to become who we are truly capable of being. You deserve your own compassion. You deserve to walk forward, lighter and freer, carrying wisdom instead of chains. May you and all beings be well, happy, and at peace.
Let us enter into a spirit of meditation. We miss this hour when we don't have church, when weather keeps us away or circumstances, when mood keeps us away or cancellation. We miss our place in the pew or in front of our screen in South Carolina, North Carolina, Minnesota. We miss the music, the ritual, the familiar rhythm, and the unexpected details. We miss one another when we don't have church, this gathering of beloveds and strangers seeking and coming home across cyberspace and in this room. And mostly we miss ourselves when we don't have church. Now then, back where our spirits belong for this time, we release the breath we didn't know we've been holding. We breathe in the contentment of having returned. We breathe out disquietude. We breathe in calm. We breathe out fear, disappointment, sorrow. We breathe in quiet joy, hope, possibility. We breathe out the world. We breathe in the holiness we embody together. Our first reading this morning from W. H. Auden, September 1st, 1939. There is no such thing as the state, and no one exists alone. Hunger allows no choice to the citizen or the police. We must love one another or die. Defenseless under the night, our world in stupor lies, yet dotted everywhere, ironic points of light flash out wherever the just exchange their messages. May I, composed like them of eros and of dust, beleaguered by the same negation and despair, show an affirming flame. From Miller Williams of History and Hope. We have memorized America, how it was born and who we have been and where. In ceremonies and silence, we say the words, telling the stories, singing the old songs. We like the places they take us. Mostly, we do. The great and all the anonymous dead are there. We know the sound of all the sounds we brought. The rich taste of it is on our tongues. But where are we going to be? And why and who? The disenfranchised dead want to know. We mean to be the people we meant to be, to keep on going where we meant to go. But how do we fashion the future? Who can say how except in the minds of those who will call it now? The children. The children. And how does our garden grow with waving hands, oh, rarely in a row, and flowering faces and brambles that we can no longer allow? Who were many people coming together cannot become one people falling apart. Who dreamed for every child an even chance cannot let luck alone turn doorknobs or not. Whose law was never so much of the hand as the head cannot let chaos make its way to the heart. Who have seen learning struggle from teacher to child cannot let ignorance spread itself like rot. We know what we have done and what we have said and how we have grown degree by slow degree, believing ourselves toward all we have tried to become, just and compassionate, equal, able, and free. All this in the hands of children, eyes already set on a land we can never visit. It isn't there yet. But looking through their eyes, we can see what our long gift to them may come to be. If we can truly remember, they will not forget. And finally, from Tracy K. Smith, the will to see oneself as fragile. The will to see oneself as fragile. The will to see oneself as fragile, fallible, liable to fail, to consider a stranger and hear in the mind's ear one's true voice, insisting, I must change. Ordinary people do this patient, urgent work alone and together, day upon day upon day. Like my mother, once leading her ailing mother back through the maze of our suburban scrawl, past ache, past haze, past confusion and rage toward a neat room where waited prayer, fear, forgiveness, grief, grace. This is a poem about kin and neighbors and nations adrift in error, under siege. This is a ceasefire poem. Here end our readings. Gathered here in one strong body, because we believe we are wiser together, because we know we are safer together, because we hope we are bolder together. Those are some of the answers I give when I'm asked why Unitarian Universalists come to church and why we belong to congregations. It can be confusing to folks who are more familiar with religious traditions that gather themselves around a common creed or that have rules about how frequently one must attend service. Why, they wonder, would we get out of the house and drive someplace for an hour a week if we aren't compelled by fear or enticed by reward, particularly celestial fear or reward? Why would we participate via YouTube with this congregation week after week out of all the thousands of worship services, of scores of faith we have to choose from? And if we get to / have to formulate and refine our own credo based on our own individual beliefs and values, what value is there to be had from joining an organization that expects financial support and volunteer commitment but offers no guarantee about life everlasting or oneness with the universe or a clear-cut path to truth and meaning? I'm not sure we ever think about it very consciously. Well, I do. But do you? Do you hear the questions from family and friends and coworkers, or maybe in your own head? And do you answer something along the lines of, because I believe we are wiser together, because I know we are safer together, because I hope we are bolder together? Or do you mostly just say, as I've heard so many of you say at one time or another, because I want community? Or because this is the progressive community I haven't found elsewhere here in Savannah, Chatham County? I believe that what's underneath that longing for community, for a progressive faith community, is perhaps a subconscious knowledge that on our own we tend to lose our way. On our own, we might get narrow and lazy. On our own, we can let fear swamp us. Now, I must say that casting our lot with the community of others doesn't assure that we won't be fearful, foolhardy, or unable to see nuance and the breadth of truth. We can probably all hear the echo of a parent's voice. If your friends all jumped off a cliff, would you? On the one hand, the cliff question and the two heads are not always better than one adage are standard parenting wisdom that also caution us about potential pitfalls of relinquishing our agency and autonomy and closely held values when joining a group. When we gather as a congregation, we could reinforce prejudices in one another. We could assume that because 2 or 3 or 140 of us hold a common belief, that that is the only truth or is a universal belief. We could become entrenched in the ways the community has always done things without seeing other possibilities. On the other hand, the buddy system makes good sense for field trips, for swimming at the beach, for women and other vulnerable persons walking alone, and for searching for meaning and truth and making our way through perilous times. As I said just a moment ago, participating in a faith community such as the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah can challenge our individual prejudices and broaden our perspectives and even protect us from trendy, attractive, but ultimately shallow spiritual practices or harmful theologies. When I was in graduate school, I had to walk through a very congested commercial square on my way between the subway station and the Divinity School. There was a sort of traffic island with a large, busy newsstand in the middle of it, and 3 or 4 streets surrounded it with restaurants, shops, other businesses, and part of the university campus on the other sides of those streets. There were crosswalks and traffic lights. There was also a lawless phenomenon. People would gather near the crosswalks, seemingly waiting for the light to change until some critical mass was reached, and then they'd all surge across the road, regardless of whether or not the walk light was displayed. In 2 years, I never witnessed a pedestrian hit by a vehicle, though surely it happened. I've thought about that square with teeming pedestrians as I've seen image after image of hundreds of people in small towns in outstate Minnesota, and thousands of people in small cities, and tens of thousands of people in Minneapolis and St. Paul take to the streets, and similar scenes in other cities in other states. There is an illusion of safety in those numbers, those crowds. But the organizers and the observer trainers warn the marchers and warn the observers that these are dangerous endeavors they are undertaking, and there is no safety in numbers. Even without training, even from a distance, we know that there is no safety in those numbers. Having seen the images, perhaps watched the videos of the murders of Renee Macklin Good and Alex Preddy, the videos of tear gas and beatings, we know it, too, from other times and other places, Tiananmen Square, the Arab Spring, Iran. There is no guaranteed safety in numbers, even in really large numbers, even in really large numbers that are on the side of justice. Yet going it alone, isolating ourselves, is almost always limiting, risky, or outright dangerous. For ourselves and for whatever cause or community we believe in and want to create or protect or sustain. Because when we're alone, there is no one to take over when we get weary. There is a practice in the creation of choral or band music that illustrates this. The following story has been attributed both to Amy Van Alstdahl and Michael Moore. One of them wrote, "This morning I have been pondering a nearly forgotten lesson I learned in high school music. Sometimes in band or choir, music requires players or singers to hold a note longer than they actually can hold a note, unless they're Becca. In those cases, we were taught to mindfully stagger when we took a breath so the sound appeared uninterrupted. Everyone got to breathe, and the music stayed strong and vibrant. So take a breath. The rest of the chorus will sing. The rest of the band will play. Rejoin so others can breathe. Together we can sustain a very long, beautiful song for a very, very long time. You don't have to do it all, but you must add your voice to the song." Often when we use music as a metaphor for church or other communities, we talk about the importance of a variety of instruments or voices, each of which adds depth, nuance, excitement, harmony to the whole. We need young voices and middle-aged voices and the voices of elders. We need the steady, grounding rhythm of longtime members and the enlivening syncopation brought by the fresh perspective of newer members. We need the variety of gifts and talents that might be imagined as the string, brass, woodwinds, and percussion, or the soprano, alto, tenor, and bass of our congregation. All of these voices, these perspectives, experiences, gifts, and talents enrich our congregation and turn it into a place where we feel at home, where we feel secure enough to re-examine old beliefs and ways of viewing the world, and to explore new ones. This aspect of strength in numbers is vital not just to vibrant, enduring congregations, but also to resistance movements, to revolution, where some people take to the streets to observe, document, and alert, and others provide food and warm clothing, and still others collect and distribute mutual aid funds, while others still drive vehicles to safety after drivers have been pulled from them and abducted. Each of these actions and dozens of others crucially contribute to the strength and effectiveness of the movement. Staggering breaths, as the story suggests, is just as vital a component of strong, effective organizations and movements as variety. When we don't go it alone, when we gather in congregations, communities, and movements, we have the option of taking a breath, taking a breather, without loss of organizational momentum. In the congregation, that means that no one person has to sit on a committee or serve on the board forever. It means that if our personal circumstances, work or family obligations or poor health, keep us away from the church for a time, the congregation continues on because we don't all need a break at the same time. Deliberately, in the case of volunteer commitments, and serendipitously, in the case of the waxing and waning of our attendance and other participation, we stagger the singing and playing of our parts and the taking of our breaths. At any given moment, including this one, some of us step away for a while and others step back in, and the congregation remains whole and vibrant. A similar staggering of voice and breath, of stepping into active protest, demonstration, witness, and stepping away for periods of rest and renewal, happens in resistance movements, in revolution. So it is that movements, like congregations, stay resilient in the most challenging of times. There may not always be safety in numbers, but there is power in numbers. The power of variety, the power of resilience, and power is what we desperately need in these perilous times, even more than safety. We need those who believe in the promise of this country, who believe in democracy and the rule of law, who believe in protecting the most vulnerable among us, to gather in one strong body. And we need those who love this congregation to gather in one strong body. The first for the survival of our country, the second for the well-being of our church. Because we believe we are wiser together, because we know we are safer together, because we hope we are bolder together, therefore, together in one strong body, let us sing and breathe, volunteer and rest, march and donate, witness and protest into the tomorrow only we together can create. Amen.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.